Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. The Rise of the Creative Class is a nonfiction work of urban studies, economic theory, and social analysis by Richard Florida, first published in 2002 and later revised. The book argues that advanced economies are increasingly driven by a broad class of workers whose jobs center on creativity, problem-solving, innovation, and knowledge production. Florida groups together scientists, engineers, designers, artists, educators, writers, and many professionals in law, finance, and business who rely on independent judgment rather than routine labor. The book is not simply about individual careers. It is about how this class reshapes cities, regional development, workplace culture, and social values. Its larger purpose is to explain why some places attract talent and growth while others fall behind, and to show how technology, diversity, and openness influence that process. As a result, the book became influential among policymakers, planners, and readers interested in the changing geography of work and economic development. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, Florida defines creativity as an economic force, not a niche cultural trait. A central idea in the book is that creativity has become a core driver of modern economic life. Florida does not limit the creative class to artists or entertainers. He broadens the concept to include people whose work depends on original thinking, technical expertise, and complex judgment. This includes scientists, engineers, architects, designers, and also many professionals in business, law, and healthcare. The point is that economic value increasingly comes from producing new ideas, new systems, and new forms of knowledge, not only from manufacturing or routine office labor. This framing matters because it changes how readers understand class structure in the post-industrial economy. Instead of measuring status only through income or formal occupation, Florida emphasizes the role of creative work in generating innovation and shaping growth. The book's argument is therefore both descriptive and structural. It describes a social group, but it also claims that this group now plays a disproportionately important role in economic change. Secondly, the 3T framework explains why some places attract creative talent. Florida's best-known policy framework is the 3T model: technology, talent, and tolerance. Technology refers to the infrastructure and innovation capacity that support entrepreneurial and knowledge-based work. Talent refers to a highly educated and skilled population that can contribute to creative production. Tolerance refers to openness to difference, including diversity in lifestyle, culture, and identity. In Florida's view, these three factors reinforce one another. A city may have strong universities or firms, but without a tolerant social climate, it may struggle to attract and retain creative workers. Likewise, openness alone is not enough without the technological base and talent pool needed for innovation. The framework is influential because it offers city leaders a practical policy language for economic development. Rather than relying only on subsidies or industrial recruitment, Florida suggests that communities should build environments that are attractive to mobile, creative workers. This shifts attention from traditional infrastructure alone to the broader social atmosphere of a place. Thirdly, quality of place becomes a competitive advantage in the new urban economy. Another major theme is that where people live has become as important as where they work. Florida argues that creative professionals choose cities not only for jobs, but also for the broader quality of place they offer. That includes walkable neighborhoods, cultural amenities, openness, vibrant public life, and a social environment that supports individuality. In this sense, the city itself becomes part of the economic production system because it helps attract the people who generate ideas and innovation. The book links this idea to the geography of growth, suggesting that certain metropolitan areas succeed because they combine economic opportunity with a lifestyle and cultural environment appealing to creative workers. This argument helped popularize a new way of thinking about urban competitiveness. Instead of treating cities as simple containers for firms, Florida treats them as ecosystems of talent, identity, and interaction. The implication is that urban planning, housing, public space, and cultural policy are not side issues. They are part of how regions compete in a knowledge economy. Fourthly, meritocracy, autonomy, and self-expression reshape workplace expectations. Florida also examines how creative workers differ from earlier industrial-era employees in the way they relate to work. He argues that this group tends to value autonomy, flexibility, self-direction, and merit-based recognition more than hierarchical control. Their jobs often require improvisation, collaboration, and independent judgment, so rigid command structures are less effective than in routine manufacturing or bureaucratic settings. This part of the book is important because it connects labor economics with organizational culture. It suggests that firms and institutions need to adapt if they want to retain highly skilled workers. More freedom, meaningful responsibility, and room for problem solving become competitive advantages. Florida uses this logic to explain why creative employees may gravitate toward workplaces and regions that support individuality rather than conformity. The book therefore presents the creative class not just as an occupational category, but as a cultural force that changes expectations about work, management, and professional identity. Lastly, the book is influential, but its urban development claims remain contested. The rise of the creative class became widely discussed because it offered a vivid and actionable theory of economic development, but its conclusions have also drawn criticism. Supporters praise its wide scope, extensive data, and ability to connect labor trends with urban change. Critics, however, question whether attracting creative people actually causes economic growth, or whether already successful regions simply attract and keep more talent. Others argue that creative class strategies can encourage gentrification, widen inequality, and rely heavily on low-wage service labor that is not fully acknowledged in the original thesis. These debates are part of the book's importance. It did not simply describe a trend. It helped shape policy conversations about city building, downtown revitalization, and regional competitiveness. Even where readers disagree with Florida's conclusions, the book stands out because it gave a clear vocabulary for discussing the relationship between talent, culture, and place. Its lasting value lies partly in that framework, which remains influential in debates about innovation-led growth and the social costs of urban prosperity. In conclusion, The Rise of the Creative Class is best suited for readers interested in urban policy, economic geography, sociology, management, and contemporary labor trends. Policymakers and planners will find its framework useful for thinking about how talent is attracted and retained. Business readers can use it to understand changing workplace expectations, especially the importance of autonomy, creativity, and meritocracy. General readers who want to understand why some cities prosper while others struggle will also find it accessible and influential. What distinguishes the book from many others in its field is its combination of broad cultural observation and a concrete development model. Florida does not simply describe the knowledge economy. He connects it to city design, social openness, and regional competitiveness through a memorable set of concepts. Even readers who disagree with his conclusions can benefit from the book because it helped define a major debate about urban growth, inequality, and the role of creativity in modern life. Its impact comes from the fact that it reframed economic development as a question of people, place, and social climate rather than only capital and infrastructure. If you would like to support Richard Florida, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.